Hello and welcome to another of our podcasts for Equine Health Week 2024. The theme of the week is equine wellness, but today we're focusing on weight and why maintaining a healthy weight is important for your horse's overall well-being. Equine obesity is a growing, if you'll excuse the pun, problem, and one that many of us are familiar with, either because our own horses struggle to maintain a healthy weight or because we know of others who face the similar problem. In fact, it's even been a recent storyline on long-running BBC radio programme The Archers. But what steps can we take to ensure that we're doing the best we can for our horses and their waistlines? To get to the bottom of this, I'm joined by a leading equine nutritionist from our National Lottery-funded World Class programme, Ruth Bishop. Ruth works with athletes across the World Class programme to devise the best nutrition plans for their horses. She's also the director of equine HG Lee Oaks, who merged with our partners Dodson and Horrell in 2020, and the chair of the British Equestrian Trade Association's Feed Committee. Welcome, Ruth.
Thanks, Rachel. Pleased to be here.
So let's start the ball rolling then. Why is a healthy weight important for equine well-being? What are some of the, maybe the implications for a horse that's overweight?
My goodness, that's an enormous question. Thank you for starting with that.
Starting heavy.
Really? Well, let's just start by talking about what overweight actually is and means. And in essence, it's fat. It's a horse is carrying more weight than it needs. It's stored excess energy over and above that it needs to maintain its body, to keep it warm, and indeed for work. And it's really important to remember that excess weight is excess. It's not needed. The same for humans, same for pets, same for any animal or human that's overweight. And we should also remember that putting weight on is kind of an evolutionary hard wiring that horses have, because in the wild, back to when they were roaming the plains, they developed the ability to put weight on when times were good so that they could lose it off their backs when times and nutrition availability was poorer. And none more so than in our country, in the UK, with native ponies or anything with native breeding. It's a well-known fact that all animals that are adapted to live on the mountains or come from the mountains or in harsh times, they feast and they have high appetite in the summer, and they actually have reduced appetite driven by day length in the winter. And indeed, the forage availability and the natural food availability goes down. They have less to eat, but they don't want to eat so much. So they have evolved systems. But if you put that into the modern 2020s life, things aren't like that. We aren't offering them hardship. So there's a life of plenty, and their body system's going, well, we'll just use that, we'll store it. So it's always bear in mind that there's an evolutionary gene here going on to store it when times are good. So we can use it when times are bad. So we need to find that balance going forward.
It's 'cause I suppose you can't really explain to a horse, right, you need to eat a bit less at the moment because your weight line a bit bigger, because his natural, as you said, his natural drive is to, well, there's plenty of food here, so I'm going to keep going, because I know, next week there's going to be no food.
That's right. And if you think about the current, our current climate, and we will talk about it further as we go through the podcast, but the thing that horses eat most is forage, and it's either grass or hay. And, when I began as a nutritionist, we were sort of trained that with grass, there was two peaks a year of grass growth. There was a serious peak in sort of April, May time, when the grass growth accelerated away with the spring and the warmth and the sunlight. But there would be a sort of a drop to June, July time, and then it would peak again in September, and that was called the autumn flush. And whilst that kind of happens sometimes, it's not routinely happening at the moment. And if you think of the season just gone in 2023, the grass was slow to get going, but when it started, it carried on. And it grew all the way through the summer, and it grew well into the autumn. In fact, it grew all the way through into the autumn. And even just before Christmas, the temperature was in the ambient temperature was in double digits. And grass grows when the soil temperature is above 5 degrees. And so if you've got a soil temperature above 5 degrees, then you have grass growth in winter. And the horse is eating that, and it's got a nutritional value. So we have to be very aware of what the horse is eating and what his day-to-day diet is, or day-to-day base diet is in terms of forage. So they're eating this, they're eating, and we're not, there's not generally a hardship facing horses. So there's an environmental sort of set of circumstances that mean that they are going to gain weight if we don't do something about it.
Yes, and I suppose we provide this very cushy lifestyle for them.
Yeah. So. But then, you know, you and I do together with the teams, generally you don't see... Generally, the horses that we're seeing at team level are fit for purpose and lean, or as lean as they need to be to do the work. So there's a strong element about work, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, back to your question, what are some of the health implications? You know, well, we know that for ourselves, that being overweight is not a healthy place to be. But being overweight today doesn't automatically mean that you or your horse or your pet are going to be sick today. It means that there's a higher risk of long-term issues, and I think that's what we probably need to lean into through this discussion, because when a horse does have an episode of laminitis, which is an endpoint that can come from being overweight, that could be seen as a catastrophic event has happened metabolically at that point, which could have been averted 10 months ago by some action that we the owner could have taken. So overweight today means do something to stop a problem happening in the months and years to come. So what could those problems be? Well, just the act of carrying more weight puts more weight on joints, tendons, feet. And so if your horse is doing work, or if your horse is going to, or if it's part of a weight management, you want to put more work into your horse, you've got to have a sound musculoskeletal system. You don't be overburdening it. So increases joint wear and tear, increases the risk of injury. And could be exacerbated by if your shoeing's not great, you know, because the angles are wrong, more weight on tendons and joints. So that's the simplest level, you know, more weight affects joints. But that fat and the excess nutrition, the excess nutrients that are going in a situation where excess energy is being consumed relative to work, fat itself is a metabolic thing, and it can begin to drive the horse's metabolism. The nutrients that the horses are consuming in excess, which in grass can be sugar, every mouthful of spring grass can be 3% sugar. It's a lot. A horse can eat 50 kilos of grass in a day.
Yeah, and if 3%, I'm not going to try and do the maths because we'll come up. But that,
let's that's not do the maths. But
it's quite a scary number.
That's a number, isn't it? And fortunately, they tend to be eating it relatively slowly, you know, over the course of whatever, 18 hours of the turnout. But there was a really neat piece of work done a good few years ago now by the Walther Mequine Studies Group. And the researcher was Annette Longland, who did some great work with ponies. And she did this thing about what happens if you restrict ponies. And then you say, well, I'm going to turn them out for 3 hours, because then they'll eat less, they'll get less grass. Ponies are eating machines, and that research showed that when you turn them out for 3 hours, they just eat. And they can eat as much in 3 hours as an ordinary horse walking down with all day to eat can eat. You know, so they can eat as much in 3 hours as an average horse can eat in a day. So restricting grazing by restricting the hours of turnout doesn't necessarily help. It's quite scary. Now, grass isn't always 3% sugar, but for us, growing spring grass is.
Yes.
And this grass, you know, we're recording this in December. The grass out there is not 3% sugar, but you know, it's just a way to frame the reference. So that intake of sugar, in the case of grass, or there's concern about starch and sugar coming from compound feeds. You know, that when it lands into the digestive tract, it's absorbed and it creates a metabolic response. And to cut to the chase, you know, one of the long-term issues about overweight horses and high sugar, high starch diets is the effect on the insulin, the endocrine responses to this food. So endocrine means the hormonal responses. So the endocrine responses to these higher levels or unused levels of nutrients that the horse is consuming culminate in a set of conditions that make the horse far more predisposed to laminitis, effectively. The term caused for the disruption to the endocrine, the hormone, like is now sort of termed insulin dysregulation, or ID, or insulin resistance, or there's a load of terms, but that disrupted endocrine hormonal pathway looks like it ends up causing problems, and then they're manifest in the foot, most likely, that enclosed situation with very delicate laminae. But ultimately what's behind it all is an inflammatory state. All that extra fat, all this sort of disrupted hormone thing, causes sort of a systemic inflammation, and the effects of that are all over the place, aren't they? Mm. So we can do things about that nutritionally, and yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's just knowing excess weight is a long-term risk factor for health. It's long-term on the wear and tear on joints, but it's also long-term. It's like in the old days, running your car with a chokeout. Running a too rich creates a different metabolic system in the horse, which can end up in an insulin dysregulation or an inflammatory state that can affect laminitis or the feet in terms of laminitis. And then if you've got an older horse, you know, because this long-term thing could go on to years, you know, older horses that may develop PPID, Cushing's disease, in that state, those horses are more at risk of laminitis. So adding PPID to this insulin dysregulation sort of zooms you in back towards the laminitis risk more. So I think laminitis is most commonly associated with this hyperinsulinemic, insulin dysregulated metabolic state. So there you go.
Yeah. That's what I brought it.
Yes, just a bit. That's very much, I imagine, set the alarm bells ringing. Yes.
But it's not a problem today. But if you don't do something about it today, it can be a problem going forward.
Yeah. And I think, well, that's probably the place to start then, is if people are maybe concerned that their horse is in this situation where maybe something needs done, I think probably the first thing they've got to do is assess how big, again, pardon the pun, problem they've got here to deal with. So what are the best ways for sort of the average horse owner to monitor their horse's weight and get an indication of what they are now and maybe what they should be?
Right, okay. Well, so this is another great question, because weight is one thing and condition is another thing, isn't it? But let's start with weights, because I think we all really ought to have a very good idea of what our horses weigh. And for more than just weight management issues, worming. You know, I'm sure you'll be doing another of these about, you know, there's the developing concerns about worming and thrombinitic resistance, and we need to know how much our horses weigh so we can worm them with the accurate amounts and at the right times. But that's another podcast for another time.
That's Wednesday's podcast,
I feel
folks.
I need to say it on weight. Weight is really important, and it's one part of the importance for healthy weight management. So the gold standard, obviously, is to weigh your horse on a weighbridge, properly calibrated, which you can do with bags of feed. You know, weigh a bag of feed, 20 kilos. If it says 20 kilos on the weigher, it's right. Now, not every yard has access to a weighbridge, but a lot of the feed companies now will run weigh clinics. And I know at least of four feed companies that go around with weigh, have people that go around with weighbridges and will run clinics. So, and you can call them and they will turn up, come up if you've got a yard of a certain size and come and do that.
And vets as well, quite a lot of vets, I think, now have weighbridges as well, don't they? And some of them will also bring them to your yard. So it's worth, as you say, either speaking to the nutrition companies or speaking to your vets, whether that is an option for you.
And they may well be related to riding clubs or pony clubs, or indeed some companies do it also, run slimming systems or slimming clubs. And so you've got an opportunity to start weighing and continue to weigh. Failing that, if you want to know today and you haven't got access to that, and not everybody has, and I think, you know, it's really important to, if you haven't got access to weighbridge, it doesn't mean to say you can't start doing something. The next best thing is weigh tapes. And there are a number of weigh tapes available. Generally, most brands have weigh tapes. You put them round the horse's middle in a directed way, and it gives you an estimation of weight. Now, they're not perfect, but the ones from long-established feed companies, and I know the nutrition partners of the VEF, Dodson and Horrell, you know, that weigh tape was developed, you know, weighing in weight and weigh taping, you know, hundreds of horses over many years a good 10 years ago. So there's a good data set behind that, and there are, and for other weigh tapes similarly. So it's a good approximation, but each horse is different, isn't it? You think about high withers, low withers, horses that are narrow, horses that have got a great barrel. You know, they are at best an indication.
But I suppose even if they're an indication,
they're a great indication.
Yes, they're going to show, but they are going to show you a change, even if that figure that the arrow is pointing at is not your horse isn't exactly 530 kilos. If you then do it 2 weeks later and the arrow has moved,
that's right.
You're going to get an indication that something has changed, be that for the better or for worse.
Yes, definitely. So how do you get hands on a weigh tape? Well, I know the BEF will be giving some away, so you have some to give away. So call Rachel. Feed company will issue them. Vets may have access to them. So do your best to get hold of one. Weigh tapes generally have usage guides, but you put them around the middle, so a slight angle, so you make, just to make sure you cover the girth area. It's difficult to do this sort of voicing when you do it in front of a horse to show you properly. Weigh taping and weigh bridge gives you an indication of the weight. Great. So you now know your horse weighs 530 or 650 kilos, or in the case of a pony, 350 kilos. The next thing is a condition. We're talking about weight management here. So what is the condition? What's the component of that weight? And your horse is going to be made up of a number of things. It's going to be made up of its digester. You know, the actual weight of a full digestive tract is about 15% of a horse's weight. Did you know?
I did not.
Oh, there you go.
You learn something new every day.
So, but in terms of this issue today, we're talking about fat, aren't we, and muscle. And there's a bit of terminology here, isn't it? Because some companies and some people talk about condition scoring and some people talk about fat scoring. And both are right. Condition scoring allows a horse to be thin. and allows, we talk about the whole range of conditions a horse might present in. Fat is all about weight management, isn't it? You've got too much fat and I'm scoring it because I want to have less of it. So it's up to you and your horse as to how you want to play it, because you might have a thin horse you're trying to put weight on, you might have a fat horse you're trying to get weight off. It's important, with our world-class nutrition hat on, we're really looking at muscle all the time and saying, well, is this horse at the stage of development to do the competition it needs to do? Muscle is important for performance, and so we do need to consider that generally for horses that are working. But in the case of today's conversation about excess weight and how to manage it, fat is really important. And so fat scoring and condition scoring in relation to fat are about looking at the fat coverage and the fat pads that a horse might have. And there's three areas really, neck, barrel, the rib cage, and the hindquarters. And in fact, in many ways, from a muscle point of view, you look at those three areas as well, but you look in different places. So neck, the neck carrying a high level of fat or cresty neck is a really good indication of excess. And there is a thing that's called a cresty neck score that we can put a link to from this body that people can look at. No cresty neck is desired. Fat wads sitting on top of the crest are not desired. And if in the extreme case, when the animal is very highly likely to get sick very quickly, is when that fat sort of falls over, droops to one side. That's so much weight of fat on top of the neck that it can't.
Yeah, it can't actually stand up.
Yeah,
the Jenga tower has fallen.
Bad news all around. An action required. Or maybe your horse is already, pony is already presenting with a metabolic condition at that stage. More typically, in some ways it's wrong to start with the neck because that's kind of the extreme manifestation of overweightness, but generally it's ribs coverage, isn't it? And different companies advise in different scales, but the traditional condition scoring mechanisms either work on a score of 0 to 9, 0 being sort of, skeletal, and 9 being will roll out the stable on its own, or 1 to 5, and it's whatever works for you. But obviously in the middle, either on a score of 5 or a score of 3, is perfect condition. There's some coverage, but not too much. a nice neck, no fat pads on the back end.
Yes, no apple-shaped bottoms.
No apple-shaped bottoms, indeed. We don't want apple-shaped bottoms. So, back to ribs coverage. You know, you want to be able to feel the ribs. You don't want to be able to feel them like a corrugated roof. You need to be able to feel the ribs. They need to be under there, but not so nicely covered. You don't have to push hard to find the ribs. and also, you know, along the top line. Back to you said about apple bum a minute ago. You don't want an apple middle line either. That's on either side. And then back to the hind quarters. You know, from a muscle point of view, we're looking for muscle, you know, between the legs, if you like. But from, you know, say the apple bum, we just want no layers of fat on top, because that's an indication of fat storage. Fat storage going into some level of fat cover going into a cold winter where the horse is going to be turned out on the mountainside, the pony is going to live on the mountainside and is going to use that fat to keep warm, is okay. But it's not okay going into a stable with rugs and having ad lib food or yeah, plentiful food, should I say, and plentiful grass, with doing nothing, because then that's just only going to get worse, because that's showing you the horse is storing excess that it doesn't need.
Okay, so we've now got an indication of our horse's weight and his condition, and we're in the position where we're thinking, okay, maybe there is a bit here that needs to shift.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to do that?
Yeah. You know,
should we start? Let's start with the grass, because you've mentioned grass already. You've dropped some really interesting facts in already. What should we be doing with grass to try and shift some of that weight?
Yeah, well, first of all, is just look upon grass, especially when it's growing. So, you know, April till whenever, you know, and typically October. Look upon it as you're feeding a high energy feed. So it's best restricted, unfortunately, and replaced with less calorific, less energy containing feedstuffs. Now that can cause a challenge to many horse owners, horse keepers. You might work, you might have turnout at livery and you have to go and turn your horse out in the morning and bring it back in. And also grass is good for the horse's mental health, isn't it? Turnout is good for the mental health. So keeping them in isn't necessarily the solution, and I'm sorry to your listeners that it's not so easy that we can say, well, you know, don't feed grass, but actually they need it, or your system means that you've got to have it. So we have to acknowledge that no grass is not necessarily an option for everybody. Therefore, it's limiting it in a way that works with your system. Nice woolly words. So could you strip graze? Can you strip graze? Is there turnout on poor pasture? But even poor pasture, you know, they can eat anything, can't they? The green fuzz, high stocking rates, making sure that there's other horses competing for that grass to make sure that there is that they can eat less. But unfortunately, keeping it at bay is probably the only true way of managing it. Some livery yards, but not all, offer like grass track systems, don't they, where the horse can move around. And I think that's a real great progression. Track systems, or the fact that the horse has to move to eat. So the grazing system is changed. The grazing, it's not a small paddock,
yeah,
the dry lot. It's something the horse has to move, which is great. So that's grass.
What about things like grazing muzzles as well? Is that something that people can try?
Yes, definitely. And I think grazing muzzles are controversial. There's grazing muzzles and there's grazing muzzles, and there's always a horse that can get a grazing muzzle off.
Yes. That pony. Is the day, yes. It's the intelligence
obviously
test,
the pony.
That one.
They are. But yes, they are the tool to limit intakes, because the pony cannot routinely just go and hoover up the grass. So yes, they are.
Yes, yeah, so I suppose it's kind of in a way like your track system. The horse is still moving around quite a lot. You're not restricting them down to a tiny pen.
Yeah.
They've still got access to the entire field. They just can't necessarily eat the entire field.
That's right. And you know, there's grazing muzzle. Do your research on grazing muzzle. They've got to fit well as well, because sometimes they're quite harsh, aren't they? And fit well, the horse does get some reward for its efforts. That's the thing. So choose well, use them as part of your armoury.
Yeah,
and I'm glad you mentioned it.
And introduce them slowly, I think, as well. Because mm-hmm. it's a bit mean to shove one on your horse and then chuck him out for
that's a very
12
point.
Hours and just leave him.
Yeah, and you know, we all keep our horses, we're not all in our yards 24/7, aren't we? We're working. We have to go in twice a day. So take the time to introduce it when you're there.
Yeah.
And make sure that you understand how they're going to behave, you know, what it's going to do to them. Because every horse is different. Yeah, they're clever, aren't they?
They are very clever.
Can be.
Yes, I mean, and speaking from personal experience, because my horse uses one, weight is one, you know, that's an issue we have to deal with on a daily basis. When we have a good doer, as they say, and a muzzle is part of her strategy, and she very quickly picked up she could eat with it on, but what she took longer to realise was that she could drink with it on as well. So that was something I had to
that's really important.
I had to show her, and it's, you know, as you say, it's all about how you introduce it slowly and give them the opportunity to do that under supervision.
Yes, without stress. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, just to finish on grass then, is that it stops growing when the soil temperature is below 5 degrees. And that means that whilst we might have in our mind that grass grows in the spring, summer and early autumn, it might not stop. And I think we've learnt that in successive years, but particularly in 2023 when the grass is still growing now. And it might be great news for feed bills that you've actually needed to feed less because there's plenty in the ground. But that grass has a nutritional value. It'll still be somewhere like 16% protein. It will still have, when the sun shines, there'll be a sugar content. It won't be the heady days of spring and summer sugar levels, but it will still have carbohydrate contents. And with the, you know, it'd be wrong not to mention fructans, you know, the concerns over winter grass and the way the grass stores its sugars, it stores sugars as fructans. Fructans have been implicated, or there's a consideration that fructans might be implicated in laminitis. So, you know, grass is there. It's essential for their sort of mental health and their exercise, but limited by turnout, by track system, by muzzles. And look at the grass in the ground in front of you. Don't assume that because it's November, it's not got any nutritional worth. So you might still need that muzzle in November, December.
Yeah, well, something I was always told was to, you know, maybe fence off a corner of grass, you know, where the horses can't eat it, and then you can actually monitor how
That's a great point to make, definitely. Yes. Or you might have it if you fenced off a tree, or you might have a fence in from the hedge line or whatever. You'll see that, won't you?
Mm.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Or even your own lawn. You know, you go to see your horse, but meanwhile at home you're mowing your lawn in December.
Yeah,
there's a clue, isn't there?
Yeah, it's still growing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
that's grass.
That's grass.
So in the absence of grass,
yes.
Other foragers.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to bring on to you. So obviously, you know, we've restricted the grass intake, but obviously we can't have our horses with empty stomachs because that brings its own set of problems. So what should we be doing then in terms of forage?
Yeah. The next challenge is munch time without calories. And, you know, so conserved forages are generally lower in energy and protein than fresh forages. So great place. Let's have a look at hay, haylage, and indeed straw. Now, some good nutritional sort of standard advice is if you're in a weight loss regime with your horse or pony, 1.5% of body weight of forage is kind of the recommended minimum. So that's why it's important to know your weight of your pony or your horse. But if you've got sort of a standard sort of Thelwell type pony, probably weighs around 300, 350 kilos. Well, 1.5%. Is 5 to 6 kilos.
Mm.
Now, in old money, in the days when we got small bales of hay, that was 3 slices of hay. That's not a lot, is it, for a whole day?
No, it's not going to go very far.
And advice to those listening is you might not get your hay in small slices, be able to portion it, but you perhaps need to work out how many hay nets that is. And then how are we going to convince them that 3 kilos lasting 24 hours is a good idea, and that they've got the munch time, because the other facet is that we might be managing their energy intake, but we've also got to manage digestive health, gastric health in particular. You know, horses only produce saliva when they chew. Saliva is part of the buffering in the stomach, so if they're not chewing, they're not producing saliva, you get an acid build-up, so you have an increased predisposition to gastric ulcers, even if they're not moving, you know. So, and then obviously hindgut health. We all know that dietary changes are a high risk factor for colic. Yes. So keeping something going through all the time is important. So back to our 3 kilos, how do we make that our Welsh pony overweight, feel happy on 3 kilos? Well, let's just talk about those 3 kilos, or that, the horse equivalent of that. First of all, it needs to be as low calorie as possible. So we're probably talking seed hay rather than meadow hay. Generally, seed hay is lower in nutritional value than meadow hay by dint of the way it's produced. Meadow hay is meadow grasses, which mature later, generally cut in June. There's more leaf, less stem. The nutrition is generally in the leaf, not in the stem. So the seed hay that's grown tall is very stalky. A few seed heads, you know, is more stalk, less leaf, less protein, less energy. Probably desirable. And the haylage equivalents. So hay, 3 slices a day, or the weighed out equivalent from your round bale or your large equivalent. Best limited into meals and then small whole hay nets. Slow feeders, anything that makes it last longer. Doesn't stop the fact that they might end up standing empty for a bit, but anything that can slow eating is important. Haylage, ditto, small hay nets, double hay nets, triple hay nets, small hay, anything to stop the eating. Haylage tends to be tastier. You know, it's softer, isn't it? It's sweeter. It's sweeter, maybe the wrong way to describe it, but it's softer, so it's sometimes consumed quicker. So just be aware that, and just on haylage, if haylage, modern haylages tend to be sort of 70% dry matter, 30% moisture. So that 3 kilos of hay is probably 5 kilos of haylage. So, you know, 3 kilos of haylage is nothing, because it's actually 2 kilos of actual nutrition. So if the benchmark for that 350 kilo pony is three slices of hay, it's probably 5 kilos, 6 kilos of haylage, which might be 2 small nets. Still not a lot, is it? So you've got to eke it out with small whole hay nets.
And just on that point, because I know a lot of horse owners think that, you know, when they hear haylage, they think, oh my God, calories, you know, much more high energy. My horse is on a diet, he shouldn't be having haylage. Yeah. Is that the case, or is it still okay if you're on a weight loss diet? So I appreciate there are some cases where your horses maybe need haylage for respiratory issues, but a sort of standard pony.
Yeah. That's a great question. You know, there is when I described hay a minute ago, I said, look, you've got seed hay and you've got meadow hay, and because hay is generally like that. With haylage, you've kind of got to know what you're getting, and often haylage has been a great friend to the horse over many years, hasn't it? Especially like you say about respiratory health and hygienic health of the forage to the horse. So it's not something we want to throw out just like that. I think the key factor is making sure the forage you feed is low in sugar. And so choose a forage supplier that can tell you that your forage is low in sugar, or do something about it. And so, for instance, you know, the high profile brands like Horsehage will have high fibre, low sugar variants that you can buy to use, which gives you a haylage option if haylage is the option. But if you go to an absolutely no discredit to local farm grown stuff, because some of those operators are just brilliant. But you've got to know that they're brilliant. Mm. If you're just buying sort of haylage, or maybe it comes with the livery yard, and you get little haylage put as part of your package, you've got to know what it is, you know. And it might have a high sugar content. It might have a high protein content if it's a meadow haylage. But the same rules apply: meadow versus seed. A coarse, mature haylage is probably better in a weight management system. I have to acknowledge that there is a sort of from veterinary quarters and in some academic circles, there is a nervousness about haylage in laminitic horses. And we yet to get to the bottom of that. But there was a key study that sort of implicated haylage as being unhealthy. And when you peeled away at that study, the issue was high sugar. It wasn't haylage per se. the driving factor seemed to be that the material in question was 18% sugar. Now, nobody now, in their right minds, would feed an 18% sugar porridge to an at-risk animal. So just, you're not poisoning your horse if you feed haylage, but use a high fibre, so known low sugar haylage in these situations, I think is my guidance. And then if good on hay, and haylage indeed as well, if you have to, is soak it again, because soaking can reduce some of those energy containing nutrients. So energy, in the case, the obvious one is sugar, but soluble proteins can go too, you know, into the water and not into the horse. So in creating an inert base to the diet, soaking above what you actually bought will also take a level of nutrition out. Soaking in itself, I feel I have to go and give some environmental guidance now. Yes. So you've created an effluent that cannot just go down the drain, or can, you know, it has to be managed, maybe perhaps put onto the muck heap or something, so that it's, because it's got a biological value that you can't put it into a river. You know, same as a farmer can't put silage effluent into a river. Once you've put sugar and some soluble nutrients into water, you've created more than water, and it has implications. So just be wary of that. But I think that's kind of well known fact now, isn't it? The mechanism for disposing of your soaking water. So that's forage.
The one you didn't mention actually was the straw. We touched on straw briefly. Should we be utilising straw?
Straw is really controversial. People get worried about straw, but actually it's great, isn't it? And straw, you're right. Talking about straw then also makes me think about chopped fibre products as well that may contain straw. You know, so straw, yeah, great. Let the horse munch on, ponies munch on straw. It's 4% protein, it's 2% sugar, it's got... Yeah, it's a flat liner in terms of calories. You know, what a great way to give an animal a chance to eat something, an overweight horse, something, pony to eat something and feel happy. They might pig out on it, so you might need to limit it. You might still need to bed them on shavings or whatever, but yeah, straw's a great adjunct to this. There's chopped straw products out there on the marketplace, and I think research has shown that, you know, small chopped fibres take time to eat, so a really good idea. You're going to go out, you've got to leave them in, or you're leaving them in a dry lot outside, and you're going to give them their hay net for the morning, a bucket of chopped straw, or a straw chaff blended with grass to no nutritional value. Obviously, there's quite a few in the market. We can select those. Yeah, really good adjunct. I'm glad you mentioned it. But people are worried, aren't they? Some people think straw is associated with colic. But then that's back to your dentition, isn't it? Making sure they can chew.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose as well, it's kind of like you're saying with the hay and the haylage, it's making sure that you're getting it from a nice, clean straw from a good supplier, that you know where it's come from. Then you're going to have hopefully fewer issues than you might with, you know, some slightly lower quality products.
And that's a very good point in terms of the hygienic quality, the quality of the material. We're sitting here in January 2024. The straw available to us is that from the harvest of 2023, and it was the wet and warm conditions that created great grass growth created not the greatest conditions for straw and harvest. So you have to look for it, you know. But again, who's there to help you? The feed companies offer these services to evaluate foragers, and it's not necessarily associated with a sale of product. You say, look, they're there to help. They are, you know, I think again, back to, you know, all the main brands would offer that support to analyse what you've got, maybe hygienically as well. So if you're worried about the quality of your forage, yeah, pick up the phone to the helpline.
And again, and that's where the chopped stuff might come in as well, because that's obviously gone through a testing process when it was bagged.
That's right, sorted.
So you've got if you are concerned, that gives you a much more surefire way of making sure that what's going into your horse is a high quality hygienic product.
And that's right, you know, and I spent a lot of, you know, my professional life making horse products. And yeah, it's really important to know what goes in. And like I say, the main brands spend a lot of time looking at the quality of what they're using. And especially when with straw and grass and lucerne. And that statement actually applies to the main haylage brands as well. You know, they put a lot of effort into making sure their products are as good as they can be. And rightly so.
Which then probably leads us quite nicely into feed.
Mm,
so what should you be thinking about in terms of feed.
So, you know, so let's think about this poor beast of ours on a weight management protocol. We're talking about feed, so we're talking about limiting feed, aren't we? We just said about 1.5% of body weight. When we all that conversation we've just had about forage, and we've talked about, you know, making it empty of nutrition so that they can eat it and they can chew it and keep the gut open, for want of a better phrase. But what we're doing is we're sort of then that's not really contributing much to the health and well-being of the horse. So that's got to come from a feed or a supplement product that is. When I'm talking to my children about eating their vegetables, I'm always talking about eating their vegetable glue. You know, the vitamins, the minerals, the trace elements, the quality protein, that's what holds your horse together. That's what means you've got a horse or pony that can do the work and that you want it to do, or the thing you want it to do. So it's really important that the quality nutrition gets into them in addition to the forage. And so what we're talking about, quality protein, what does that do? That's supplying, obviously, muscles, essentially amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. They contribute a lot of things to a lot of the horse's mechanisms of being. So all those hormones are proteins. Mm. They need protein raw materials. So we need protein. Vitamins and minerals, essential for, gluing everything together. You know, metabolic function, bone strength. Ligament strength. And interestingly, this time of year, just January, when grass grows in the winter, it's growing slower. It pulls through less minerals as it's growing through it. So grass is a source of minerals, not so great in the winter. Grass is a source of minerals per se, not so great. So we do need to top up. Winter, definitely major minerals, calcium, phosphorus, magnesium. All year round, trace minerals, copper, zinc, manganese, iodine, selenium. Best way to do that is through a feed product. A lot of the conversations now are about using balancers, and rightly so. Concentrated, 500 grams a day for a 500 kilo horse, you have 100 grams per 100 kilo body weight, meets the vitamin trace element and protein needs of those horses. There's more modern products now that sort of combine balancers with chew factor, you know, so chaffs or whatever, but the core of it is you need the balancer in there to provide those essential nutrients, and they will also be augmented with digestive support as well, because in this reduced throughput, sort of reduced intake thing, we've got to keep that hindgut healthy, so yeasts and probiotics and all those things are in there as well. So definitely a balancer. And what do we not want them to contain? We'd want them to contain all these good things, protein, vitamins. We're really monitoring starch and sugar content. I feel I ought to mention that. Owners tend to be frightened about percentages of starch or percentages of sugar. And there's another term, of course, NSC. NSC is usually the term that nutritionists use for the total of starch and sugar. And so there's phrases bandied around, numbers bandied around. I've got to be below 10% starch. I've got to be below 10 to 12% starch and sugar. Horses don't eat percentages. Horses eat grams. I said that straw is 2% sugar. But if you're eating 10 kilos, a pony, fat pony, munches away through 4 kilos, 4,000 times 2% is still greater than a treat that's 60%. Starch, but is fed at 5 grams, so the treat's probably okay. And the hay, I think I did some maths on this to talk about that 3 kilos of hay. Let's say that we talked about the 6 kilos of hay for the pony. If that hay is 10% sugar, that's 600 grams. So a treat that gives 10 grams. Isn't really moving the dial, is it?
No, in moderation, we should say.
In moderation.
This is not an excuse to go and feed your horse 60 treats.
That's like, polo mints are all sugar. You know, they weigh, what do they weigh? You know, I think, and carrots. I know people get worried about carrots for insulin dysregulated or metabolic EMS animals. A carrot is 85% water. And that 15% of dry matter in that carrot will be... It might be 20% sugar, but it's still not a lot of sugar. I do have to put a caveat that when you're in that metabolic state, when the horse is in an EMS state, equine metabolic state, or it is known to be insulin dysregulated, or it has had laminitis, perhaps different rules apply, don't they? Because those horses are like, their metabolisms are like tinderboxes. You don't need to be putting anything in.
No.
And there's other treats you can give that aren't going to be full of sugar. And there are other things you can give to make their lives more joyous. But for the average overweight horse, a carrot's not going to do any harm. But back to feed. So a balancer, 500 grams, will contain a bit of starch and sugar, but it won't be in a way that's going to tip a metabolic edge. You know, so a 500 kilo, a 500 gram balancer in a 500 kilo horse, 20% starch and sugar, say, that's 100 grams. You know, when the horse is going to be eating, let's say, or 600 grams from the forage. A kilo of sugar from the forage, and if it's at grass, we talked about that, 3% of body, 3% of every mouthful is grass, you know, so the feed isn't really contributing large amounts.
No.
But aim for a low starch sugar, and there's plenty of lower starch and sugar options on the market. If your horse is, one area that obviously interests me with my world-class performance hat on is that, you know, horses do need some starch and sugar to work. And I think it's also important, you know, work does in some ways change a lot or improve your options for what you can feed. But in this backs against the wall, we're trying to manage weight down, 1.5% of forage, body weight is forage, and a concentrated vitamin, mineral, protein deliverer, balances have become the norm. There are supplements to do that, you know, there are handheld or you know, general purpose supplements that also can do this, depending on how you like to feed your horse, you know. So balances, supplements, supplementation is essential. And that's your start point. Keeping the feed simple, yeah. Restrict forage, forage options, grazing muzzle, core diet supplied by balancer and or general purpose supplement. Mm. Job's a good one, isn't it? You know, the job's a good one, you're there. If the animal is already in that metabolic state, that has, you've got that diagnosis, the bloods are showing you that, you know, that you've got insulin dysregulated or you've had laminitis, there may be, I said at the beginning, didn't I, that they're in an inflammatory state then, and so there's a cause perhaps for extra in anti-inflammatory support, so antioxidants in the diet. There's plenty in a balancer, there's plenty in a general purpose supplement, but if you've crossed that line and you're in, you know, you're really struggling, then more antioxidant support would probably be beneficial as well.
And that's probably the time to speak to your vet, speak to a nutritionist, get that more tailored support for that horse that's in real need.
Absolutely, because at that point, when you've got a diagnosis, you're under the care of the vet, and the vet should be in charge of the first point of call, and the nutritionists augment that. Definitely.
And I think as well, it's also worth pointing out this, when you are putting together this feed and forage plan for your horses, most of the feed companies will offer a nutrition support line or something like that. So it's always worth picking up that phone, speaking to an expert who can help you put together the perfect diet to suit your horse's needs.
And we're so lucky now, aren't we? Because we can do it on FaceTime. You know, we can see the horse, but it's not a voice on a phone call anymore, is it? It can be, you can actually show your horse to people.
Yeah.
And obviously feed companies generally do one step further, they will go onto yard. As I said, we talked at the beginning about clinics and if you're a yard of a certain size, you know, 10, I think it's usually it's like 10, isn't it? It's more, depending on, feed companies have people on the road that will come and see you. We've got the clinics, you've got phones that we can perhaps actually see the animal and do a virtual condition score with you. it's all achievable with that sort of framework of, you know, manage the intake of forage, the grass, manage the intake of, control the intake of the conserved forage, top up the essential nutrients through balancer and or general purpose supplement. And then we're on to management, aren't we?
Yes. And
we
that
should
is...
argue we should do first, but, you know.
Yes, well, that, I mean, that is because people do, you think, right, we need to lose weight, and people focus very heavily on the feed side of things, and which we've talked about in great detail. But as you say, there is also the management aspect that supports all of that as well, and it becomes a very all-encompassing regime change that your horse has to go on. So what should we be thinking about then in terms of management?
Really good point about regime change. Weight, and with ourselves as well, we have to change our behaviours, don't we? We have to go to the gym. We have to decide what we buy. There's a really strong human element to this as well, changing behaviours. So you've got to be up for the change, and you've got to be up for the change in the long haul. Can't do it for a week. Weight loss in a horse weight management in a horse takes weeks and months. It doesn't happen, as it doesn't happen with ourselves. So you've got to be sort of...
It's a commitment.
It's a commitment. You know, go for it. And so, first of all, you know, it's December. Sorry, no, it's not December, it's January. It feels like December.
The year's getting away from us and it's only just started.
It's December, January. You know, what could we do in the winter is we can make use of the way the horse is wired and let them burn fat by using no rugs. Clipping. Let them burn the calories that they are predetermined to burn at this time of year. Their appetites are, certainly the work by Caroline Argo in Liverpool, you know, a good 20 years ago, shows they do have this period, they do have, especially the native types, a declining natural appetite in the winter. So make use of that, turn them out. This weight management regime is perfect then, because they're not expecting to eat it.
Yes.
They eat so much. Use the winter to control weight. Use cold weather. Clip, no rugs, turn them out or turn them, let them get cold, let them burn the weight, number one. Number two is exercise. I think there is a huge requirement for exercise for two reasons. Exercise burns calories, but it also, it develops muscle. And this old saying about, oh, you know, we need a bit of fat, we'll turn it into muscle. Only muscle develops muscle. Fat is fat. And but muscles are really important, because when we talked at the beginning about the metabolic soup changing in horses that are fat and excessively fat, the thing that should happen is that, you know, soluble carbohydrates go into the digestive tract. They get digested to glucose. Glucose gets absorbed. Insulin is produced. It takes the glucose out of the blood, puts it into muscle. Excess muscle glucose is stored as glycogen for work, and then excess is stored as fat. So that's sort of the chain of events. The reason we put it into muscle is because the horse has muscles and we have muscles because we want to use them. So the more muscles you have and the more the muscles are used, the more that normal hormonal system works. You know, consumed, put in muscles, used, not stored. And so the more we can use muscles, the better. So an exercise is just so important in weight management, as it is for ourselves. We are now, we can see it every day. We go... You know, whether we're on Peloton or we get our noom prompts on Facebook about what to do, or our Apple watches tell us what to do. You know, technology is telling us to exercise, get up from our desks.
Yeah.
Our horses need to do the same thing. And we need to use muscles. So what are those muscle programs? And not everybody can. Not every fat horse can. You know, you might have crossed the line, there may be joint issues. But let's start with horse that can work. Work them to the bit, make their muscles work. Active work with the muscles working, horse in and out line. And some is better than none, but an amble round the lanes is not work.
No. I suppose what you want to do is get that heart rate, get that breathing rate up.
Heart rate. And the muscles engaged.
Yes.
And the muscles contracting and whatever, because that builds muscle strength. All that fitness work, yeah, and start. If you're starting from zero, you've got to start with walk. You can walk in hand. You can walk. And take a leaf out of the book of world-class performance, pole work. Think about our own world of yoga or Pilates. We're strengthening our muscles without necessarily doing the impact and the cardio. But pole work is the equestrian equivalent, isn't it? Making them pick their legs up. Make them all those physio exercises that we do with our sport horses to make their muscles stronger, we can do with our overweight horses.
Yeah. And it's even stuff you can do in hand if your horse can't be ridden for whatever reason, or you're short on time, you could just do a in-hand pole work session.
I think that is really worth trying to, above all else, you know, it's late, you get back to the yard, it's 6 o'clock, it's cold, it's minus six, whatever. You can still do, if you've got a lot of that time, back to this commitment thing, you commit to doing it, and some is better than none. And as the situation improves, you can do more. The situation meaning they lose a bit of weight. Not every horse we're talking about today can do the work, like you said. You know, they may already have pre-existing conditions. They might be recovering from injury. It might be an injury or an illness that's caused them to get fat. Or an injury to you. You might, the rider might have got injured and the horse has stood idle. So the situations by which the horse has become overweight, they're all different, as are the things that you the owner, can do to improve the situation. But exercise, using the muscles, is key.
But I think again, you know, talk to your physio. They will be able to recommend some exercises, some pole works, and things like that that you can do with your horse that suits their capabilities at this time.
Yeah, and if your main point of contact is the vet, vets and vet practices usually work in conjunction with the physio.
Mm. And, you know, sanity check it with other people if you're concerned.
That's sort of a good point, isn't it? You're not alone.
No, exactly. And, you know, there'll probably be, on most livery yards, quite a few people facing these problems in this situation. So, you know, make your own slimming club. Work together, you know, motivate each other, share ideas about what you can do with your horses. And it might be that that particular group of horses can go in a certain field together and be managed in a certain way that complements them. You know, as you say, we're in this together. It's a team effort, you know.
It is, and take successes as well. You don't get instant success, do you? Because you don't. Well, you will actually. If you're like ourselves, you know, you put yourself on a diet, and oh my goodness, you've lost 2 pounds in the first week. But that's generally water that you've lost. Mm. The real stuff comes in the weeks and months ahead, and because it's a slow process, you've got to look for the. Well, I did manage 5 days of exercise. I did get a pole work session in on a certain number of days. We did go out for that hour at the weekend or whatever. Just congratulate yourself. Make it a positive experience, because that's how you change habits, isn't it? Reward yourself. And when we were talking about weighing actually earlier and condition scoring, probably keep a notebook or a score sheet with records. Mm. And again, companies produce them.
Yeah, Dodson Hall do a very, very useful one that's available online. As you say, it's, you know, it's doing that regularly, noting your progress, because then also you can see the weight coming off, but you'll also be able to notice if it creeps back in again, because maybe for whatever reason your regime has slipped a bit.
And that's the other thing. In a situation where you're managing weight because you don't want the problem to happen in the future, it's a different place to managing weight because you've got a problem. But in that first one, where you're managing to because it's the right thing to do for long-term good health, we all fall off the wagon, don't we?
Mm.
Yeah, it will go up and down, but as long as the direction of travel is generally down, we will have bad weeks. We all have in our diets, don't we? You know, I'm sitting here talking to you doing dry January. You know, it's hard. will I be able to do dry 2024? So with weight management and horses, you just congratulate yourself when you get things right. Don't worry if you have a bad week.
Yeah, and maybe, as you say, set yourself some goals, because, you know, you said dry January, that seems far more achievable than dry 2024.
For sure.
You know, set yourself a weight with that target. Yeah. Okay, you know, you want to lose 10 kilos off your weigh tape, and that's great. And then once you've aimed for that, you can then set yourself a new target and keep going, because that it's far more achievable. It's mentally, it's far easier, because you can look at that and it feels like it's within touch.
Yeah, and in many ways, just start.
Mm.
Just start. Get your network, like you said, the community. Talk to your vet, talk to the feed company, talk to helpline, make sure the diet's right, and just go for it. You know, because if you don't start, you won't know, will you?
Well, there we go. There is our challenge, horse owners.
You've just started. I just want to say a couple of things about feed, actually. Weigh it. Weigh it or measure it. We talked about weighing and measuring the horse and scoring it. The feed companies make it easy. The balancers are easy to feed, because generally the feed companies will, those companies, the balancer specialists, will supply you with a cup that tells you what the weight is. And we can look at one here today. You know, they're graded, so you can see what you're feeding. So it saves you having to take a weigh scale in. The thing we talk about with the world class as well is, from time to time, weigh your feed, weigh your scoop. If you're feeding one of these sort of new kind of balancers plus chaff, what does your scoop hold? And make sure you just check that from time to time. Sometimes, even with professional riders, you find you get drift. You know, it's quite a difference between a flat scoop and a heap scoop. There's quite a difference between feeds. You know, so you can't just assume it. So let's just check. And if somebody else is feeding your horse, make sure there's a line drawn on the scoop that you don't. Maybe if you want the half a scoop, you show them what half a scoop is. Because we don't all feed our horses all the time, do we? You know, somebody might help us out. And so measuring what's being fed, what does what does the weight you want to feed look like in the scoop? Yeah. It's kind of important thing. When we're just talking just then about starch and sugar and choosing balances, choosing main meals, because of course you might want to be feeding your main meal, you might be working your horse, you might have moved off balances onto a compound feed a day. What are you looking at? In store, the first thing you can see is the feed label. And each product, feed and supplement, there's some real commonality in the way feed labelling is presented to horse owners, and that is related to the regulations by which feed and supplement companies operate under. And let me tell you, there's a huge raft of regulations that feed and supplement companies work with, at least 10 major bits of legislation that we all have to comply with. One of the major pieces is how we label our feeds and how we make claims for our feeds. Very, very tightly regulated. And so sometimes what's in a stitched-in label or on the back of pack might not be what you're looking for. So by law, a feed company has to list oil, protein, fibre and ash, vitamins A, D, not necessarily vitamin E, and then they've got to talk about the added trace elements and the added probiotic yeasts that they've added. And then they've got to give instructions for you. So that's the mandatory stuff that's got to be on there.
But there's a very key piece of information, based on our conversation here, missing from what's on that label.
And we're talking about energy and calories, aren't we? And we're talking about starch and sugar. Now, those companies may put them on the back because they might voluntarily do it, but space may preclude them for that. Most reputable brands will give you a starch and sugar and an energy value. And phone them up or look on the website. The website's a brilliant source of information. And they're all accessible on our phone now. So yeah. Data sheets.
And no limits on space either.
No limits on space.
And I think one thing that we've missed that you might see on your label is particularly if you're competing, is important, is the Beaten Ops logo as well.
Yeah. Now, that's a really, really good point. And it comes back to my roots in making sure that what we put together for the horse owner is fit for purpose. And anti-doping is massive. And Beaten Ops is a scheme put together by the British Equestrian Trade Association to give owners, riders, keepers, there's the assurance that the feed company has done their best to keep those contaminants that can come in through feed at bay. And so it's really, really important for definitely people are competing at any level, because the affiliations go in affiliated competition, the affiliations also track back to either the FEI rules or the racing rules. And yeah, they have strong prohibited substances policies that have to be adhered to. So Beaten Ops is really important, very important in competition. It's also become a badge of quality, a quality standard. And I feel I ought to mention quality in general, because as reputable feed firms and supplement firms, the first responsibility is to make safe product. That's the first, I mentioned the 10 rafts of regulations that we have to operate to. The first one is that you'll make safe feed fit for purpose. NOPS is a fit-for-purpose piece, isn't it? It says, oh, if you beat a NOPS, you're making... Anybody who wants to do something with their horse that involves competing under any rule, that's the badge of honour. But the other piece is it safe? Oh. Is it free from heavy metals? You know, and that puts a huge responsibility on us to make sure our supply chains are good and true. And it's kind of the unseen thing. I think sometimes horse owners think manufacturers are black box. It just comes out. But the work, you know, it's like ducks and swans, you know, gliding along, looking effortless. There's an awful lot of work going behind the scenes or underneath to make sure things are safe. NOPS is a really good benchmark for that, because they've had to do the safety bit in order to get to the NOPS party as well.
Yeah.
So really important. I'm glad you mentioned it. So the other thing, you know, so safe, fit for purpose. In feed, I feel like I mentioned, and so certainly in relation to overweight, the area of claims is really important, because I think owners got frustrated that we want to do something for our horses, so we want to go and buy something that's functional. We're very constrained on what we can claim in feed. Feed is not medicine, I think, is the take-home message. Medicines cure and treat. Feed supports and maintains.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. There's been a lot of information thrown around, and hopefully everyone listening has taken something away from this. I've taken a lot away from this. I certainly have. I've learned a lot today as well. So thank you very much, Ruth, for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed sharing your wisdom with us.
Oh, you're a great interviewer, and really thank you very much.
Thank you
for asking me.
And yes, so I hope everyone enjoys Equine Health Week, enjoys the rest of the content we've got coming up this week. There'll also be some resources and things on social media as well, so keep your eyes out. Ruth did allude, we might have some weigh tapes and things to give away as well. So yes, plenty more to come, both today and for the rest of the week.